for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
And we're back. Welcome back, everybody, to the FTN DataCast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network here on Monday, April 11th, 2022. Adam Pfeiffer here, joined once again for the second episode with my co-host, Tyler Lochner. Follow him on Twitter, at Tyler, at Lochner NFL, rather. Tyler, how was your weekend? What is going on? It's good. You know, they let us do a second episode. So
things, I was just about to say that. We made it past episode one, so I can't complain.
We made it past the pilot, but what's up, man? How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. I'm ready to talk about some breakout players here with you.
Yeah, breakout players here for the second episode, and we'll get into like a handful of players, but like, what would you classify as a breakout? Because I think kind of like sleeper, there's a different ways to kind of break it down, right? Is it a player that just kind of comes out of nowhere and it's like, oh, he just, you know, this player hits the scene? Or is it simply a player that is going to have maybe a career season? I think the majority of the players we are going to talk about are second-year players or relatively younger players, but there could be, you know, more veteran breakouts. Maybe it's just a player that you expect to have a career season.
Yeah, remember Gary Barnage from like 10 years ago? The tight end, he broke out when he was like 30. I would say I've got a pretty simple definition for it, and it's a player that has never been an every-week starter in fantasy that becomes one. Like a player that you just don't even have to think about, and you just put him in your lineup every week.
Yeah.
But in previous years, it was like a bench player that you would maybe put in the flex.
Yeah, I think somebody that stands out is Alvin Kamara's rookie season, kind of. Like I remember it was like the London game. He was at the time playing behind Adrian Peterson with New Orleans, and then the London game, he kind of broke out, and then from then on, he started to take over. It was like, okay, if you picked up Alvin Kamara, you're not benching him at this point. He was just that good.
Yeah, that's so true. It's a good point too. It's kind of like Tyreek Hill early in his career too. Like guys that just did unreal damage, but never really saw much volume.
The best example from last year is probably Cordarrelle Patterson, right? Like,
yeah.
As more of a veteran breakout, right? Like he's always been a talented player. It's just whether he was on Minnesota, Chicago to an extent, they gave him some carries, but it was more so just kind of up the middle. Atlanta finally used him, you know, in a multitude of ways, and it finally showcased the ability he can have, not just, you know, in the special teams and kick returning, but he was a full-on breakout, and especially because he was running back and wide receiver eligible, like full-on breakout.
I think it's players that you really have conviction on that won't, obviously they need to see more volume to be a breakout player, but you need to have conviction that they're actually going to do something with that volume too.
Yeah. It's a good point. We'll get into all these players, but first I want to just remind everybody, in case you missed the first episode, Tyler and I talked about all of the craziness that was this offseason, all the trades, free agent signings, you know, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, you know, all the quarterback changes. We talked about all that, and we kind of introduced the podcast. So I guess real quick, Tyler, before we get into the breakouts, kind of, you know, if we have new listeners that didn't make the first episode or just, you know, catching up, talk about exactly, again, just kind of remind everybody what we're doing, what our goal is on this podcast that we launched just last week, the FTN DataCast.
Yeah, it's great. Our goal here is to go data heavy on the analysis. There's so much awesome data. There's actually a bunch of free tools too at FTN. We'll talk about some of the free tools that you can use too, but with a subscription, you get access to some pretty unreal tools. I actually don't think anybody offers as many that we do it. And really the goal is to just make listeners more informed, help them make smarter data-driven analysis, whether they play redraft, dynasty, best ball, DFS, you know, we're really kind of covering all the bases here, but the underlying theme is no narratives and just data.
Yeah, and like you said, we have a ton of great stuff at ftnfantasy.com, so make sure you're checking that out. Jeff Ratcliffe launched his rookie guide. The NFL draft starts in a couple
that
weeks.
Thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, if you are behind on, you know, this draft class and learning some of the players, you know, that's where you go. Go to Jeff's draft guide.
And
I think he has more rookie content starting this week. Or not starting, but continuing this week. So definitely check that out, as well as all the great content at FTN Fantasy. We'll have a ton of basketball still, even with the play-in tournament starting, and obviously football, baseball just launched. We've had a good start for baseball. So FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, FTN Bets, all that great stuff. Check it out. Tyler, let's get into some breakouts here. Let's start at the quarterback position. You had a player written down on your list that I could not agree on more. One of my favorite players. You know, he hasn't had, you know, a ton of experience in the NFL, but he clearly showed a lot of flashes in his rookie season.
Yeah, not only did he show a lot of flashes, I guess we've kind of buried the lead here. We're talking about Justin Fields, for those uninitiated on just how good Fields was down the stretch last year. I think a lot of his rookie year was marred by the fact that he was pretty awful out of the gate. I don't really think there's any way to get around that. I don't have it in front of me, but I think he only threw for like 67 yards in his first full game as a starter, or, you know, something kind of pathetic like that. Was having a hard time beating out Andy Dalton. And even when he did become the starter, it was pretty rough. But then November, December came around, and in his final four games as a full-time starter, he was a fantasy quarterback one in all of the games. He scored over 21 fantasy points in those games. So not only did he show those flashes, like you mentioned, but those flashes came at the end of the year. And that always gets me pretty excited. This is a player I don't think we're going to talk about, but Amon-Ra St. Brown, right?
You don't have to talk about it, dude. Like, what? Like my favorite rookie. In the draft class.
I loved him. But the fact that his stretch was in over the second half of the year, mm-hmm. it just makes you feel so much better about it, right? Like, it wasn't spotty. So with Fields, it wasn't like Fields came out and smoked one game and then was bad two or three games and then smoked another game. I actually like the fact that he was kind of bad and then was really great at the end. And here's a stat that I found in our expected fantasy points tool. This is something that Jeff Ratcliffe puts together. Fields only threw 7 touchdown passes, which is horrible, obviously. But his expected passing touchdowns was 14. So he only threw for half of the touchdowns that he would otherwise have been expected to throw for. So if you think that that might regress to the mean, you can expect a lot more passing touchdowns from Fields next year too. And then obviously, I'm sure you have this in front of you too, but his rushing ability is really what makes him so enticing from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, I mean, what was it? The game against San Francisco, he had that crazy fourth down rushing touchdown where he like went back and forth and made a bunch of defenders miss. Like, it was incredible. And yeah, I mean, he had at least 35 rushing yards in 6 of his 7 starts last year. That floor is going to be there. Like you said, he was a top 12 quarterback those last 4 games. And really, like, the situation around him was bad. The offensive play calling was, like, archaic. It was really bad. There was no, like, creativity. And you mentioned getting off to a slow start, and I think that was 100% on Chicago. Justin Fields didn't play with the starters in the preseason. Like, he didn't play with Allen Robinson. I don't think he played with Darnell Mooney. Like, when he played in the preseason, it wasn't with the starters. So, and you mentioned the touchdown expectancy, their expected fantasy points. Like, that'll tie into what I'm going to talk about Cole Kmet. But, like, Cole Kmet didn't score last year on a ton of targets. That's not going to happen again either. So, Justin Fields, like, quarterback is so deep that, like, Fields probably, like, in your traditional 12-team redraft, still probably goes undrafted. But if, obviously, Superflex is where he really, mm-hmm. like, can stand out. But, like, if you're in a situation, if you're in a deeper league and you miss out on the top 10 to 12 quarterbacks, whoever you have ranked, you know, in the top 10 or 12, Fields is the perfect quarterback to pair with somebody else. And just, you know, 2 high upside quarterbacks and one of them hits, you're in great shape. And I think Justin Fields, the only thing I don't like about his situation is outside of Atlanta, this is probably the worst group of receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, it's,
like, I love Darnell Mooney, but after that, it's Equanimeous St. Brown and Byron Pringle was one of their free agency moves. Like, it's bad.
It's really not why you're drafting him, though. Sure. You're drafting him because he can run. So I agree with you. It's a bad receiving group, but to your point, you're not, first of all, you're probably not even drafting him unless you're in Superflex or deep league. I do think if you're a kind of an extremist draft strategist, you could not draft a quarterback and or just draft Fields in the last round and see how that plays out. You would have to be okay with your backup being streaming quarterbacks all season, but I do think that that is a viable strategy.
Yeah, and before we move on, like, I'm sure it didn't help either, like, you know, when both Fields and Dalton were healthy, because there was games where they were kind of both on the injury report, yeah. There was COVID. I'm sure it didn't help as a rookie quarterback, first round, you know, selection, not knowing, like, okay, am I going to start this week? There was a lot of weeks where, like, it was a little bit up in the air. Now Fields entering his sophomore season, he'll be more comfortable. He knows that it's his offense. And I still think, you know, he was top 13 in adjusted completion percentage on deep passes. He was really accurate on deep passes at Ohio State. So I do think he and Darnell Mooney, again, you can literally package Fields, Mooney, and Komet as all breakouts this season. All young, all super talented. I love Justin Fields. We don't have it's tough with quarterback, right? Like, is any other quarterback that stands out? Because, yeah, and a lot of them are like, you know, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Like, these guys have already broken out.
I think Lamar Jackson.
Then you have veterans like Brady and Stafford and Rodgers. Like, they're not breakout candidates either. Tua makes sense, I guess. We talked about Tua last week.
Yeah, Trey Lance.
Yeah.
He's very similar to Fields, right? Like, I kind of just lump the two of them together, except Lance has a much better supporting cast. I would say his breakout potential is greater than Fields is, but I also don't think, you know, we're really breaking any new ground by talking a bunch about Trey Lance. Like, he's a great breakout candidate. Tua, I think I said last week I'm not sold on Tua, but if he's going to be good, it's going to be this year.
Yep, and if he's not, then he's just not the answer for Miami, most likely.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. This is the year we find out.
Yep. All right, let's go to the running back position, and he will be the clear-cut choice for every breakout, you know, for this season. It's pretty obvious. Maybe Melvin Gordon goes to Baltimore, maybe not, but either way, Javonte Williams, standout sophomore running back. What he did in college was break tackles at an alarming rate. What he did in the NFL, the same thing. Javonte Williams, we got the report that Melvin Gordon was visiting the Ravens and might sign there any day now. The second that happens, Javonte Williams is a top 7 overall player, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. We don't need to spend a ton of time on him because, again, like you said, he's going to be at the top of any breakout list, but you can't talk about breakouts and not talk about him. I knew he was good, right? And then I dove more into the stats and I was actually a little surprised at just how good he was. So here's just a couple of stats from some of the FTN tools. He was 7th in average yards gained after contact. This is among running backs with a minimum of 100 rushes. He was 5th in missed tackles forced. And he was top 15 in gash run percentage. So that's the percentage of his runs that ended up going for over 10 yards. And I was thinking, like, my memory of last year, just from a psychological standpoint, is Melvin Gordon just running for long runs all the time. But Williams actually had a higher gash rate. Williams actually ran for 10 plus yards more often than Gordon. I think the reason Gordon's just stick in my mind a little bit more is because his went for touchdowns and Williams' didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that surprised me a little bit. Like, Williams is not just a between the tackle like grinder. He also can break long runs, and he did last year. So to me, that basically just solidifies him as an excellent breakout candidate. And then, of course, it's a tiny sample size. It's only one game. But in his one game without Gordon last year, Williams just was incredible. He scored 30 fantasy points. He had over 100 rushing yards.
That was 76. Chiefs game, right?
I don't remember who they played.
Yeah, it was the Chiefs Sunday night game. I remember it now. Yeah, he had a huge game. He had like a bunch of receptions too.
Yeah, yeah. He had 30 total touches.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's unreal.
I don't know if he's getting that if Gordon's gone.
Yeah, but of course not.
With how good he is, as long as he gets 20 a game, that's all that matters. And
of course,
we talked about it, the offense is going to be sustaining more drives of Russell Wilson. I do think there's a chance they go a little bit more pass heavy, but like it was literally a 50-50 split last year between him and Gordon. So even if, you know, whoever it is behind, you know, Mike Boone, they bring in somebody, whoever gets like 20% of the work, Javonte getting 80% is still a clear top 7 running back for me. It's almost like everybody's just kind of waiting until it finally happens and we can safely say that Melvin Gordon is no longer with the Broncos. Then it's just wheels up for Javonte Williams. And yeah, you mentioned those missed tackle four stats. They're obviously impressive in itself, but then you look at he had 203 rushing attempts last year. So he had one fewer, he forced one less missed tackle than Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb had 25 more carries. One less than Jacobs. Jacobs had 14 more carries. 11 less than Jonathan Taylor, who obviously had a 330. Like, so he was, yeah, good work. But like we said, he was splitting it with Melvin Gordon all year and still was a, you know, top five or six in missed tackles for us.
Yeah.
He's awesome. Like, he won't. The only way he doesn't go in the first round in a draft, he'll go early second. And even
the
then,
And the Broncos added Russ Wilson. We didn't even mention that. Right. So their offense just got so much better.
Yeah, he's going to be at least a top seven draft or overall player for me as soon as Melvin Gordon signs somewhere else. Yeah. Maybe it's a situation where it's like, because I think Denver still wants him. I think Denver wants to use two running backs, but
Gordon is better. Gordon is better than fantasy football nerds.
Oh, he had a very, very good year last year. That,
yeah, he's legit.
Nobody
good.
Talks about it because everybody wants it to be Javonte Williams' time, and I get it, but it's not discounted. Melvin Gordon played really well, and like, while it's trending towards him not coming back, it wouldn't shock me if he was back next year. I'd probably lean towards more 60-40 entering this season between the two instead of 50-50, but it'd be enough to keep Javonte. He could still easily break out, but it would keep him out of the first round if Gordon came back.
I agree. Yeah.
I want to talk about a running back too that I kind of added last second, but Rashad Penny. Like, I know Seattle's offense, we talked about it last week. It's not too exciting right now with all the changes, and who knows, there might be even more changes on the way. But Rashad Penny, like, the drafting him in the first round a couple years ago, you know, it wasn't really a smart choice. We understand that, but at least last year he finally stayed healthy and showed what he can do when he's healthy. I mean, Rashad Penny down the stretch was just ridiculous. He was the RB1 pretty easily the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season. I just had a bunch of stats in front of me, and I clicked off it by accident. So that's a great job by me. But basically, Rashad Penny, like, Chris Carson is not going to play for a lot of this season. And they brought Rashad Penny back. They were already just running the ball at a crazy rate with Russell Wilson all these years. So now with no Russell Wilson, they'll have no problems just, you know, running and running the football. And it's going to come down to health for him. But what's stopping him right now from getting 18 to 20 carries a game?
Yeah, I think the volume will definitely be there. He played so well that Pete Carroll was comfortable moving on from Russ Wilson, which is crazy. I don't think that's actually true, but it's the way it feels.
With Pete Carroll, it's possible.
My concerns with Penny are that he only caught 6 balls last year, and with Wilson being gone, the touchdown potential in Seattle goes down. But I will also say I was a Penny skeptic during his entire breakout last year, and I completely missed all of it. So
it was crazy. Yeah, I finally have the stats now. From week 14 on last year, he led the NFL in rushing yards with 671, rushing touchdowns with 6, 100-yard games with 4, and yards per attempt at a totally sustainable 7.2. And yards after contact per attempt.
That's unreal.
A lot of those were long touchdowns too. Not that you can project them, but you feel a little bit better about it if you're worried about the offense because Penny showed that ability to break a ton of long runs.
It's like Jonathan Taylor with Carson Wentz as his quarterback last year.
Right. So, and like Chris Carson, who knows how much he's going to play? I think it's, you know, at least for this year, I think it was a 1-year deal. I think it's Penny's backfield right now. So I don't mind him as a potential breakout candidate either at running back. And then a player we haven't seen in a while, J.K. Dobbins. I mean, this backfield, if Melvin Gordon signs there, I don't know if it takes away from Dobbins' breakout because, like, at the meetings last week, I think John Harbaugh said that it's possible that one or both of Gus Edwards and Dobbins could start on the pup list. So maybe bring in Melvin Gordon's insurance for health purposes, but you like him as a breakout, and the talent's there, the offense is there. And Baltimore is going to run way more than they did last year. They had to throw way their passing rate went way up because it's actually not even A or B. It's just the fact that they were completely depleted on both sides of the ball. The running backs were hurt. Their secondary was absolutely depleted, and they got behind in games. Their defense on paper, healthy, is going to go back to being a top five unit, in my opinion. And we know this team wants to run the football.
Yeah, I think there's obviously no stats from Dobbins for last year, but he'll be only 23 years old for the majority of the season. And in 2020, when he was a rookie, he was only a part-time player, but he still scored 9 touchdowns and he averaged 6 yards per carry. So we were drafting him as like a mid to high RB2 in fantasy last year. And as of right now, I'm perfectly comfortable still doing that. If Melvin Gordon signs, obviously the situation changes, or if he starts the year on PUP and misses the first 6 weeks, the situation changes. But assuming he's healthy, assuming Gordon doesn't sign with Baltimore, which might be a risky thing to assume, I really, really like Dobbins as a breakout player this year. If Gordon does end up signing, then we could honestly see like another situation where it's a pretty even split between someone like Dobbins and Gordon, like we saw with Javonte Williams last year.
Where would you be comfortable drafting him right now? Because I feel like where Dobbins is going, I prefer, and again, it's like the mostly, I wrote an article for FTN today. It was some early ADPs, and it was strictly from Underdog, because that's kind of the most, I guess, you know, actionable ADP to use right now.
Mm-hmm.
But like looking at that ADP, he was, I think he was in terms of running backs,
he's like RB 17 right now.
Yeah, he is exactly RB 17, you know, 44th overall almost, right around Montgomery. Zeke's a crazy, it's so crazy to see Zeke where he's going. He's 18th at running back. He's in that range of Aaron Jones, Dave Montgomery, Zeke, Etienne, Elijah Mitchell. Like, would Dobbins be one for you of that group? He wouldn't be for me. I would still prefer Montgomery and Zeke. But like, we'll talk about it when we do like bust and everything. Like, I prefer Dobbins over Elijah Mitchell. Like, it's interesting. I'm sure Breece Hall will, you know, assuming he gets drafted by Buffalo, say he'll climb and stuff like that. But I think that's where he belongs in that tier.
Yeah, I think that's for right now, that feels about right. I think a couple of the guys below him I would have above him, like Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, Fournette and Connor are easy. Their ADPs make no sense over another dog. I wrote about that today. That'll change within the next month, I would imagine. They'll be like in the third round or second round.
But yeah, Dobbins mid to low RB2 right now is where I'm comfortable drafting him.
Would you prefer Dobbins or Elijah Mitchell?
I think I would prefer Dobbins. I'm not super high on either, but I really...
We'll talk. I'm worried about Elijah Mitchell this year.
I don't love running backs without high draft capital, and Mitchell doesn't have that. I know he was good. I know he was great last year, but that's my biggest concern with him. They don't tend to stick. I mean, Arian Foster stuck, but that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
If Buffalo does not draft Breece Hall, would you rather have Dobbins or Singletary?
Says the Buffalo fan.
I'm literally going in order down the list. We already talked about Jacobs, and I decided to miss Michael Carter too.
I probably Singletary just because of the way he finished last year, and they've really soured on Zach Moss.
Yeah, and I'm not going to talk about him. I talk about him too much. I am the biggest Singletary fan out there. If they don't draft Breece Hall, he's a breakout candidate too, because we saw we saw glimpses of it down the stretch. Look, the crazy thing about that too was, he was getting goal line carries and scoring. And they said, again, we want Josh Allen to run less. I don't believe it personally. We see this every year with quarterbacks that make plays, you know, running the football and throwing it. We want them to run less. And then the game's on and they're making plays because they're just great football players.
No, yeah, you don't want him to run less until he's like in his 30s and he's not as effective.
Yeah, Josh Allen's 25. He'll be fine. Yeah,
he's fine.
All right, let's go to wide receiver. A lot of interesting names here. A lot of sophomore receivers, a lot of young, talented receivers. Who do you want to start with? Again, we have a lot of players here that showed a lot of signs, either as a rookie or, you know, first couple years in the league.
Yeah, I'll start with the player that I'm going to be insufferable about all offseason. I already am, I think. But
so Michael, you're warning me.
Yeah, Michael Gallup. I where he is currently being drafted right now, which is wide receiver 57, absolutely makes no sense to me. Like, it makes me like mad that people are drafting him. What is that? That's like almost a wide receiver 6. That's like almost undraftable at that point. Gallup is going to be Dallas's wide receiver 2. Amari Cooper's gone. Cedric Wilson is gone. Gallup, when he was before CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper came in, he caught 66 balls for 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns in his second year. And then he started to play second fiddle behind Cooper and Lamb. But he's going to be back in as a every down player this year. There's literally no way in the world that he does not return value on that wide receiver 57 cost. He was top 50 in points per game last season, and that was when he was third, fourth, maybe even fifth on the target tree in Dallas. And again, Cooper and Cedric Wilson are both gone now. Gallup here is such an elite value at this stage. I just don't see it lasting. I looked at the FTN splits tool going back to 2018, Gallup's rookie year. In games with at least seven targets, which I really do not think is a very high number, right? Like seven is a very reasonable number for him to hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
in most of his games. But when he had at least seven targets in games, he averaged 16 fantasy points per game, which is enough to finish as a top 12 wide receiver. I'm not saying Gallup is going to finish as a top 12 wide receiver, but that stat, I think, illustrates that he's very, very good with his targets. He's going to get more targets. He's going to be a player that is in fantasy lineups every single week next year. You can absolutely book that. And he's basically free in drafts right now.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll see how much time. I would imagine he probably, because he got hurt late in the season, so I would imagine he might start on the PUP list, and that'll have obviously impact his ADP. But yeah, like once he's back and acclimated and ready to go, like at worst he'll be your wide receiver three, and there's a lot of upside there. Obviously with Amari Cooper gone, Cedric Wilson gone, so yeah, like Gallup, and look. They literally chose straight up to keep Gallup or Amari, and they chose Gallup. You know, they could have made the choice, and they gave Gallup a lot of money coming off the ACL.
I just think the ACL doesn't, I guess maybe it should, maybe I'm being naive about it, but like players don't seem to miss going into the next year off ACLs anymore.
No, maybe you're totally right.
They just don't seem to.
And like, again, like sure. Say he misses the first couple weeks of the season, okay, then you get him at a value still. And like you said, I agree. Like, I don't think there's many scenarios, unless you're completely loaded at receiver, which is entirely possible, where you're just saying, okay, I'm benching Michael Gallup. And like his splits last season, Amari Cooper missed a couple games. Gallup obviously got hurt in week one and then missed a decent amount of time. But Amari Cooper, I think, missed like three games. I think he missed two with COVID. He was averaging like right around that number you said, seven targets a game, like 60, 70 yards. He's always been a good yardage guy. So, like, yeah, Gallup, really talented player. Dallas clearly likes him a lot. So, good call on Michael Gallup. I want to talk about Kadarius Toney. Another receiver that I loved coming out of college. Was pretty surprised he got drafted in the first round by the Giants, but clearly they love him. He showed serious flashes when he stayed healthy last year. Those couple games, the Dallas game, the Saints game. Granted, a lot of it came with Galladay and Shepard out, but like this team is going to change drastically now with Brian Daboll there. Brian Daboll, like the Giants last year, I believe, were bottom five in snaps on offense where they were in pre-snap motion. Like they just had no creativity. That's going to change with Brian Daboll. They're gonna line up Kadarius Toney all over the formation. They're going to play him, they're going to put him in the slot, put him out wide, put him in motion. Kind of like, look what Isaiah McKenzie did when he got opportunities last year. With the way he was used in jet motion, jet sweeps, pre-snap motion. If they use Kadarius Toney like that, who's a far more talented player, I mean, there's a massive ceiling here. And the other thing with Daboll is, okay, Galladay's still there, Shepard's still there. I think Brian Daboll, again, the Bills didn't have Saquon Barkley, and they also had Josh Allen. But like, I think Brian Daboll is going to continue to run through. Like, the Bills ran three wide with Brian Daboll more than any team in the league outside of Arizona. So if they run more three wide with Brian Daboll, Tony's going to be on the field all the time anyway. So don't have to worry about Shepard and Galladay in terms of playing time. I just think that what we saw from him, he's so talented. He was, elite after the catch perception, and It's a question mark for every receiver on this team somehow. But if Toney can stay healthy, and if Daniel Jones just takes a little bit of a step forward, there's top 25 upside given what we saw from him last season. And no, Brian Daboll is not going to magically turn Daniel Jones into a superstar quarterback, because to be fair, he helped, But he wasn't the reason Josh Allen broke out. The reason Josh Allen broke out is because Brian Daboll helped him and put him in great situations. And Brandon Bean made additions to the team to help him. But it was also a lot of, Ken Dorsey and Jordan Palmer working with Josh Allen, in summer and stuff. Daniel Jones is not going to be Josh Allen, but I don't think he has to for Kadarius Toney to be a breakout candidate and a top 25 receiver. I love him as a player. What do you think about Toney?
Yeah, Toney is awesome to watch, first of all. And you touched on this, but the big question with him, and there's really very little we can do about it, unfortunately, is what do we take value out of last year from the Giants? Because wide receiver was a revolving door of players being injured and being out of the lineup. So it seemed like every single week they had a different wide receiver one. But what we did see out of Toney when he was healthy was elite target share, elite production. In his final four fully healthy games, he had target shares of 25%, 35%, 32%, and 22%. I mean, those 30 numbers, that's like Davante Adams level elite right there. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen again, assuming that players are healthy, but I would say anything less than 20% target share for Toney, even with a fully healthy cast, would surprise me. And I do think Toney will push Kenny Golladay as the team's leading wide receiver. You talked about games where he just went ballistic, but he had 189 yards in a game, and that was in week five. 189 yards is absolutely nothing to scoff at for any wide receiver, let alone a rookie receiver. And he was just completely uncoverable. And then the very next week, he had three receptions on the team's first drive, and then he got hurt. And I think
I remember Twitter was
he was
so,
going to go nuclear.
Yeah. Twitter was so upset that he got hurt because it was about to be like a 10 for 180 in a touchdown game at least. Like he was going to go crazy.
He was going to go crazy, and then he got hurt. It kind of derailed the rest of his season. He was back healthy for two more games where he saw 12 targets and 9 targets. Which again, it's hard to read too much into those numbers because of all the injuries that were happening at the same time to other receivers. But he's a first round talent that flashed elite talent last year. So he's got very high draft capital. Of all of the receivers in New York, the only receiver that I think is just as safe as Toney is Kenny Golladay, just because of how much money they're paying him. Also, I think Golladay is amazing. And then again, just the big question is Daniel Jones actually as bad as we think he is? Unfortunately, I think the answer is yes. But I do think that a player like Toney, who can make stuff happen when he has the ball in his hands, is not as impacted as a player like Golladay.
Right. Like, I think Brian Daboll is going to manufacture touches for Kadarius Toney.
Yes, I agree.
100%. Whether it's two jet sweeps a game, couple screens, like he is going to get touches drawn up for him. And this will have no impact on your analysis or why you want to target Kadarius Toney. But I'm going to call it right now. He will throw at least one touchdown pass this year because A,
I love it.
He can. We've seen his arm. B, Brian Daboll called plays a couple years ago where John Brown was throwing touchdown passes to Josh Allen. I'm calling my shot right now. Kadarius Toney will throw a touchdown pass to Daniel Jones this year. I'm calling my shot.
I like it. All right. I like it. Book it.
I don't know when. I don't know if there's going to be a line to bet on that. But if it is, I'm telling you, that's going to happen at some point this year. Hopefully Daniel Jones catches his ball, though. He actually had a sit. Remember the one-handed catch Daniel Jones had? It was last year.
Yeah. He's athletic, dude. He's really athletic. I wish he was better at... I don't know what the issue seems to be with him. Just decision-making, maybe. But he has all of the tools to be really good.
Yeah, well, this will easily be... I mean, Jason Garrett... Talk about archaic offenses.
Imagine hiring Jason Garrett as your offensive coordinator.
The difference between offensive philosophies between Jason Garrett and Brian Daboll is massive. Again, he's not going to be Josh Allen. He's not going to be close, but he should be better with Brian Daboll. And look, again, if they can stay healthy, Golladay, Shepard, and Toney is not a bad three.
It's a really good receiving cast.
On top of Saquon Barkley out of the backfield. Again, another player you hope to stay healthy. If that offense stays healthy, I remember this was the first year going into Galladay's It was like we're talking about it. And of course, they had Evan Engram, who we're a little bit unsure about. A lot of people said the Giants had like a top five overall, top 5 to 7 overall group of offensive skill players, because Barkley, when healthy, is still amazing. We know Galladay is still an incredible player, and Shepard's been consistent and solid. It's just they got to stay healthy. That's going to be the key for this Giants offense, more so than I think most teams in the league, just because they've all been so injury ridden. Let's go to a pair of second year receivers with the same last name, Elijah Moore and Rondale Moore. You had Elijah Moore written down. I had Rondale Moore. Elijah Moore, talking about, you know, unfortunate injuries. Then he got COVID, I believe. He was about to potentially win some fantasy leagues for people down the stretch before he went down, because he was really picking up steam, whether it was with Zach Wilson, Joe Flacco, Mike White. It didn't matter. Elijah Moore, once he got acclimated in the offense, he was balling.
Yeah, Moore was incredible for an unfortunately small stretch of time, but he had his final five healthy games. He averaged 9 targets, almost 6 receptions, over 75 yards and a touchdown per game. That included a multi-touchdown game, a game where he had 141 yards. He scored in 4 of the 5 games. They also brought back Braxton Berrios, which I think means we'll see a little bit more of Elijah Moore on the outside, where I guess depending on your style of, in PPR leagues, it could lead to fewer receptions, but it ideally leads to more damage per reception if he plays more on the outside.
Berrios also returns kicks for them too, so I wonder how much that had to do with it. But he, down the stretch, he was playing a lot of receiver too.
Yeah, that's you're right about that. That's me conjecturing on how they're going to use Berrios. I do think that
he'll be involved on the offense, yeah, for sure.
I do. I think he was good enough down the stretch, yeah, that he kind of becomes their like go-to. Like, everyone's going to want a Cooper Kupp now, right? It's like, it goes back to just like the way kind of Wes Welker changed that. I think, 15 years ago, I think Cooper Kupp just kind of changed it again with how you can use slot players. But the bottom line is more, like you said, yeah, he was on his way to being a league winner. I honestly don't have too much more to say about it than that. I just think his stretch was impressive enough. Everyone loved him as a rookie in the fantasy community, and then he was delivering like even more than we could have imagined. And then he just got hurt. I also think Zach Wilson is not as bad as his rookie year final numbers showed. I'm a little bit of a blind believer there, but I just see like,
no, he looked a lot more comfortable the last couple games. Yeah, like a lot more.
He did. And I just think his like his arm talent is just kind of unbelievable to me. So a little bit of a banking on that to happen, but I think more, like you said, he was performing with literally every single quarterback that was coming under center. So I also think Moore's a little bit QB proof there. So I checked a lot of boxes. The only thing was it was a small sample size, but again, we liked him even before that sample size, before that 5 game stretch. So I really, really like him coming in fully healthy.
Yeah, and it was funny because there was not like massive concerns, but remember in the preseason, Zach Wilson would throw to Corey Davis. But I don't think Elijah Moore played in the preseason because he was a little bit banged up. So yeah, Corey Davis looked like the clear top target, but there was nobody else catching passes during the preseason for Zach Wilson. And then Elijah Moore makes his, you know, NFL debut, and then clearly starts to become the focal point of that offense. So
he's basically a first round pick, right? Wasn't he the first pick of the second round?
Yeah, early, very early second,
or like
round.
First or second. Yeah. He's got the tools that you want, or not the tool. He does have the tools you want, but he also has the draft capital that you want, like an early career player to stick in an offense and be heavily utilized.
Yeah. I remember watching a lot of his tape, and like, he just knows how to get open, especially against zone defense. Like he's just so good at getting in the soft spot of the zone, just sitting down. And he's going to be, we talked about Jalen Waddle after like last week, after the Jalen Waddle or after the Tyreek Hill trade, would you rather have Waddle or Elijah Moore redraft just this year? I think it's a lot closer than it was 2 weeks ago.
It is closer. I think I would probably still say Waddle. But they would be very, very close to each other.
Yeah. I agree.
I just think Waddle is like an unbelievable player.
Yeah, I mean, that we talked about, that speed on that offense is insane.
Yeah.
Speaking of speed, Rondo Moore, he's got plenty of it. A little bit of a down rookie season last year. Playing time was inconsistent. He only ended up playing like 30% of the snaps on offense, 37% of the snaps, playing behind DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk, and then AJ Green, who was a lot better than people realized last year. People thought he was kind of is done. But we saw a little bit, but it was kind of frustrating because there was nothing downfield from Rondo Moore. He averaged minus 0.1 yards before the catch perception. Minus wow. 0.1. Easily the lowest mark among any receivers. Like
that's even lower than some running backs.
It's yeah, like if you look at the leaders, it's or the I guess the guys at the bottom in that range, it's all running backs and Rondo Moore. Now a lot of that is, and there were questions when Rondo Moore was at Purdue. It's like a lot of his last year in college, a lot of it was manufactured touches on screens and quick passes, and people wondered if he could win deep, and he could the year before, but they didn't ask him to because he was Purdue's entire offense that final season. So they just got him the ball quickly and let him make plays. And in Arizona's offense, they run screens as much as anybody in football. Like Kyler Murray last year missed three games and was still fourth in the NFL in passing attempts off screens with 78. So it's a huge part of their offense, right? But now you have Christian Kirk gone. AJ Green is a free agent. They just brought back Wesley, but like right now it's Wesley, Hopkins, and Rondell Moore. And I talked about it earlier, but this team has run three wide sets more than any team in football. So Rondell Moore is going to go from under 40% snaps to a full-time player. And it's still an immensely talented player. Like he's going to get more targets and playing time. He hopefully gets a little bit more downfield work, but even if he doesn't, the volume should go up. And him being so good in the screen game, he still fits this offense really well. So I'm really excited about Rondell Moore this season. DeAndre Hopkins should still see like a 25 to 30% target share, you would think. But like Christian Kirk played really well last year. AJ Green was getting all the downfield targets. Like now, and DeAndre Hopkins gets like no downfield targets because they don't move him around the formation. So Hopkins, if you look at our alignment numbers and everything, like he's since he's been a Cardinal, he's literally lined up on the left side of the formation so often. They don't move him around. But with Kirk and Green gone now, maybe they just move Rondo Moore around the formation, and that's really exciting to me with Kyler Murray in this offense.
I think that's a good call. I honestly have thought very little of Moore up until you kind of had him on your list, but the vacated targets there is a great point. The fact that Moore really does fit that offense is a great point too. My only concern as of now, and again, this might change with those guys gone, but he only saw 8 red zone targets last year, and he saw either 0 or 1. Let me find it. He only had 1 end zone target. So he was very, very lightly used.
Yeah, I still think Hopkins is getting all of them again, like he did last year. Like Hopkins was touchdown dependent last year. Was
and
weird.
Why not? Right. DeAndre Hopkins, you're going to throw him the ball there, but no, that's not a bad call. I think maybe he's a post type sleeper.
That's, on March 5th, I wrote an article of post type sleeper article for FTN Fantasy, and Rondo Moore is in that article. So
there you go. There's an article plug.
Feel
for
free
you.
To read that. I will say, having Zach Ertz there does take away a little bit of where Rondo Moore will get his targets in the short and intermediate areas. But again, the playing time should help kind of balance that out with Kirk and Green gone. Again, another sophomore receiver. Loved Rashad Bateman coming out. He missed a lot of time to start his rookie season, which is always tough for rookie receivers. We talk about it a lot. They tend to really, come on down the stretch. And we saw a little bit with Bateman. He played with multiple quarterbacks. He played an offense that was a little bit more passive than normal, but for the most part, run first. But again, like Rashad Bateman, there was a reason why we loved this rookie class so much last year. And we've only seen the beginning for a lot of these sophomore receivers.
I think Bateman was one of my favorite receivers coming into last year's class. I didn't totally love the landing spot just because Baltimore is not a high volume passing offense, as we know. And then he was hurt. So a little bit of a frustrating rookie season, but what we did see down the stretch, I think was highly encouraging. and in particular was his playing time. And you can find this on the FTN Snaps report, which is a free tool. If you just Google FTN Snaps, you'll find it. It's right there. But Bateman's snaps over the final three games of the season, 93%, 83%, and 87%. So over the final month, Baltimore entrusted him with a full-time role. Previously, he was between like 40% and 66%. A snap share. So that was a huge leap for him to become a near full-time player. And Bateman was significantly better than Marquise Brown on a per target basis last year. I'm not 100% sure if that's just because Brown was struggling with efficiency, or, you know, maybe it was just a down year. So maybe we shouldn't read too much into it, but Bateman only saw 67 targets. This is from weeks 6 to 17 last year. So when Bateman was actually playing, he only saw 67 targets, while Marquise Brown saw 107. But Brown only gained 42 more yards than Bateman, despite seeing 40 extra targets. So Bateman was highly efficient with his targets, at least compared to Marquise Brown. And then we also just have the fact that Baltimore's offense, passing offense last year, completely funneled through Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews. Those two guys were between like 25% and 35% on every type of market share stat you could look at: target market share, air yard market share, red zone market share, touchdown market share, etc. And there's just really, I don't think if Bateman is truly going to play like 80 to 95% of the snaps, there's just no way that those two guys are going to continue to see 25 to 30% of everything. Bateman is absolutely going to start to eat into that. And we did find it a little bit. I found the stat on the usage by situation tool at FTN. When Baltimore was losing last year, Bateman had a 17% target share, which was extremely close to Mark Andrews. Andrews was at 20% there. So again, not the world's biggest sample size, but that does show that when Baltimore had to pass, Bateman was a larger part of their offense. And then he makes that leap into year two. I don't think it's unreasonable. Maybe I sound crazy, but I don't think it's unreasonable that Bateman becomes Baltimore's number one wide receiver. I do still think Andrews ends up leading in target share because Andrews is amazing and has a great connection with Lamar Jackson. But in terms of Marquise Brown versus Rashad Bateman, I actually think by October timeframe, we'll see Bateman as the team's leading receiver.
I like it. I liked Rashad Bateman a ton coming out of college as well. So, you know, now hopefully having to not miss the first, you know, month and a half or so of the season definitely won't hurt him. Let's close it out with tight ends. I kind of, you know, led with this earlier when we were talking about Justin Fields, but Cole Kmet and tight end, it's dangerous to say it like this every year, but it's kind of,
you're gonna say it's deep, aren't you?
It's just probably like not gonna end up being deep tweet. But you can make a case for a lot of late round tight ends. And Cole Kmet, I was pretty much saying the same thing last year. He just didn't score. Like, he had 60 catches, yeah. Didn't score, but he had six end zone targets.
Did he literally not score a touchdown?
He didn't score once, not wow. once. He had six end zone targets, which is like, you know, slightly below average among tight ends. It was around average, but Jimmy Graham barely played on offensive snaps, right? Jimmy Graham was like 23% of the offensive snaps for Jimmy Graham. Kmet was at over 83%. The thing that made the difference was Jimmy Graham was 13th among all tight ends in end zone targets, and over 27% of his targets came in the end zone, which was the highest rate among all tight ends. So Jimmy Graham's gone. So Cole Kmet's going to be the clear, you know, target in the end. Like, again, like, who is this team throwing to in the end, and when they get in close, if yeah, they're not no, running
you're
the football,
100% right?
Who are they? Like, I love Mooney, but that's not his role really. He's got to, you know, gets deep down the field and wins. I don't know who else they throw to. And I mean, Cole Kmet, you look at our market share numbers, 17% target share, which is sixth best among all tight ends. Allen Robinson's gone. We talked about how weak the receiving group is. It's going to be Mooney, the running backs, and Cole Kmet. And I just think if we're expecting Justin Fields to break out and take this leap, he obviously for fantasy, he's going to do a lot running the football. But as an NFL player, like, if he takes the leap, Cole Kmet has to be a huge reason why. So I struggle with between Cole Kmet and Irv Smith. They're like my two favorite tight ends if I miss out on the position. And I've also been drafting Zach Ertz because he's like, I have ninth at tight end right now, and he goes like at tight end 12 or 13. So I've been, those are the three tight ends I've been targeting a lot. I know we talk about the Bears, but what do you think about Kmet and then any other breakout? Like, I'm telling you, Tyler, they're like, you can make the case for like six tight ends to break out. And of course you want these tight ends to break out, not to be, yeah, he can be a top, he can be the tight end 10. Like, we want somebody that has the upside to be tight end 5 or 6. Maybe Kmet has that upside, but like, he just didn't score. And he's going to be as involved as, like, I don't know if you can find 10 tight ends in the NFL that'll be more involved than Cole Kmet this year. He's just got to score. And he's not going to score 0 touchdowns again. Like, that's just not happening.
Yeah, I know. I like your call on Kmet here. And when I dove into the numbers, I was expecting this to be like a complete Jimmy Graham problem. Like, Kmet just completely came off the field. But that actually didn't happen. Kmet was already second on the team in red zone targets last year. And he equaled Jimmy Graham in end zone targets. But to your point, with Graham gone, they don't have somebody else to throw to. So Kmet's end zone targets very, very realistically go to the 10 to 14 range next year, which is huge, right? If he catches half of them, he's got 5, 6, 7 touchdowns right there. I think that is the biggest boost for him if he's able to, you know, if Chicago doesn't go sign. I mean, is there even a wide receiver they could go sign right now that is, I mean, just like a tart, like maybe, I know, Odell Beckham?
Right. I know they were very interested in Marquise Valdes-Scantling. It's like they're definitely looking for another deep
threat.
But
I'm talking about like an end zone threat. I guess OBJ is
Fuller, like
deep threat though. Like,
yeah, like Landry's still out there, I guess.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. So I see Kmet as the team's primary.
So you think you think it's legitimately possible he gets to like 14 end zone targets? Because that would have led the league last year. And if he gets that, on top of, he had 60 catches last year, I think if he stays healthy, he smashes 60 catches.
Yeah, I'm not saying,
like, he could easily be top 5 among tight ends and receptions this year, like easily.
I'm not saying that's going to happen, but
it's possible.
Yeah, I'm saying it's possible. I really do. Because if you just take Graham and Kmet and combine them together, because it's not like it's a tight end position, and they're devising these plays for tight ends. And they were probably doing it for Jimmy Graham specifically, like, you know, force feeding him the ball in.
Oh,
in
they
the
were
zone.
Because he, like I said, he only played like 23% of snaps. So you have to imagine a huge chunk of them came when were inside the 10 yard line.
I'll say this. I think 10 end zone targets is Kmet's floor next year.
I mean, yeah, we can't predict touchdowns, but sign me up for that. Cause I think he's going to see, like I said, he saw 17% target share last year. That was with Allen Robinson there for most of the season. I know he missed games down the stretch, but like, I think, like I said, he's not going to do what Mark Andrews did last year, 107 catches. He's not going to do what Kelsey does. But like Dalton, could he have a Dalton Schultz year from last year? 78 catches, 800 yards, and 8 touchdowns. 8 might be a little bit high given what, I don't expect the Bears offense to be top 12 or anything. But like, I would not be shocked if he caught 80 passes. And with the touchdown, again, you can't predict touchdowns. But if he's top 5 to 7 in tight end targets, he's not going to have 0 touchdowns again. It's just not going to happen.
The other tight end you mentioned was Irv Smith.
Yes.
And I do really like Smith. I've always liked Smith, probably too much.
I mean, you're on the right podcast, because all I did last year was talk about Irv Smith with Derek Brown. Like, just he's so talented. And when he got hurt in the preseason, I was like, oh, well, there goes my enjoyment of watching football this year.
He is so talented. And it was so promising in 2020. The team really started to use him more near the end zone and red zone area. They had like plays specifically designed for Smith on the goal line. And I think Adam Thielen is still so heavily utilized at the goal line, but I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how long that lasts. Like, Thielen is very clearly, in my opinion, going over the hill. Could he still be a deadly red zone weapon, especially with, you know, whatever crazy connection he has with Kirk Cousins? Yeah, absolutely. But I think that Thielen going a little bit over the hill is a good thing for Irv Smith and his potential to catch touchdowns in that offense. And then just Smith's cost right now, he's the tight end 19 coming off draft boards. And that's right where Tyler Conklin finished last year in fantasy points per game with the Vikings. and Irv Smith is better than Conklin.
And Conklin's gone, right?
Yeah, and Conklin's gone. I do think Conklin is a little bit underrated from like an athletic standpoint, but Irv Smith is still better. So from a cost perspective, Smith is right on target too.
Yeah, when I do those underdog drafts, it's going to be the same philosophy for me at tight end. If I don't get Kelce or Andrews, I'm going to wait and pair Irv Smith and Cole Kmet and stack Cole Kmet with Justin Fields. And that's what I did last year, and I'm going back to it. Irv Smith, again, we didn't see him last year, obviously, had the meniscus injury in the preseason, but back in 2020, there was a stretch down the end of there was a stretch towards the end of the season where Kyle Rudolph was out. Weeks 14 through 17 in 2020, no Kyle Rudolph for Minnesota. Irv Smith, tight end 4 in fantasy, around 13 fantasy points per game, ran a route on 89% of their passing snaps and was second among all tight ends, like you mentioned, in end zone targets during that span. So I'm not saying he's going to be the tight end 4, but that's the upside he showed. That was with Jefferson and Thielen playing as well, I believe. Here's the other thing. Brand new offense in Minnesota. I think they're going to pass way more than they have the past couple of years in their old regime. I think they're going to be more fun offense. And again, Irv Smith, I don't think he's going to see quite the volume as Cole Kmet or Zach Ertz, some of the tight ends we talked about, but talent-wise, you know, athleticism-wise, I'm still all in. Only 23 years old. Love Irv Smith. Anybody else talk about?
Not a lot to say, but completely free, probably more of a waiver wire watch, is David Njoku.
Yeah,
especially if Deshaun Watson really does play the whole year. Deshaun Watson makes everything better in Cleveland, and Njoku is completely free.
Yeah, I like that call. I'll add one more before we get out of here. Gerald Everett. I can't quit Gerald Everett. He's with the Chargers now. Just any pieces of that offense, I'm all right with. I still can't quit. I mean, Jared Cook had some good weeks last year.
He did.
Jared Cook's role. So you could do worse than Gerald Everett for sure.
Gerald Everett won me a bunch of money on that crazy Rams Chiefs game, Monday Night Football game from a bunch of years ago. The
50-55 yeah. one or whatever. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So
that game feels like it was 10 years ago.
It does.
It's crazy.
I'll always have a soft spot for Everett.
There you go. That'll do it for us, though, for episode 2. Appreciate everybody listening, as always. If you could, leave us a rating, review, all that great stuff. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. Helps us out. You know, we really appreciate it. We like doing these podcasts. We're going to do them every Sunday night. We'll be up Monday over at FTNFantasy.com, plus on all your podcast platforms. Tyler, before we get out of here, we got another week ahead of us for content at FTN Fantasy. Plug some stuff that you got scheduled this week. I'll be doing a breakouts article, which kind of, you know, ties in really well as some other stuff.
Yeah, this week I've got a couple of interesting articles coming out. I actually think these will be pretty fun to write. So it's kind of like a handicapping the candidates at each position most likely to be the top scorer. I don't think I can actually handicap them. It might be a little bit arbitrary to just be like, oh, you know, 25% chance that this guy finishes top. But I think I'll put them in tiers, and just to give everyone a sense of who the candidates are this year to finish at the top of the position poll for each group: quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. So I'll go pretty deep on the list, including some players that are probably long shots to finish as number one overall, but I'm not going to throw anybody in there that's completely unrealistic.
Sounds good. Be on the lookout for that, as well as all the great content at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets. This has been episode 2 of the FTN DataCast. For Tyler Lochner, Adam Pfeiffer here. Have a great week. We will see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter @APfeiffer24 and @LochnerNFL.